Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, and welcome to Adoption Focus. My name is Jennifer Jaworski, and I'm a social worker with Adoption Associates of Michigan. This is Adoption Associates' premier talk radio blog show. Adoption Associates and its staff are trusted leaders in adoption, and we have placed well over 5,000 children into loving homes. Since 1990, we have advocated, supported, and nurtured both birth families and adoptive families, and helping families and birth parents grow through the adoption process is very important to us. Our offices are located in Jenison, Lansing, Farmington Hills, and Saginaw, and our pregnancy and adoption services are available throughout all of Michigan. One of Adoption Associates' commitments is to this weekly radio show, so thank you for listening in today. We hope that you find this forum to be inspirational, educational, and thought-provoking. If you'd like to call in during the show with questions or comments, we would love to hear from you, and the number is 347-850-1100. Again, the number to call in would be 347-850-1100. We do hope to hear from you. And today I'm really excited that Jessica Wisniewski has joined us on Adoption Focus. Jessica, are you with us?
I am.
Good morning, Jessica. Thank you so much for being on today's show.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. And so Jessica, for those of you listening in, is a mom to two children, and she is going to talk with us today about her experiences specifically with international adoption. So let's go ahead and get started. And Jessica, if you would tell us what led you to adoption.
Absolutely. So after going through some tough times having a child biologically, it became very clear to my husband and I that this was not the path we were meant to follow, so we immediately decided to focus all of our attention on adoption, and we were very led to international adoption from the get-go. So we started our process in 2011 with Adoption Associates, and I remember we went to an informative session at the agency to kind of browse through the programs and learn about the countries that we could adopt through AAI. And my husband and I don't always agree on everything. So it was very interesting to us that we left the session and we looked at each other and we said, "What are you thinking?" And we both immediately answered Ethiopia. So we just felt very drawn to adopt from Ethiopia. And that's where our son is from.
So I don't want to jump back just a second and ask you, you said that you both felt very led to go move towards an international adoption. Was there something in particular that you could speak to, or was it just one of those things that you knew that international was the direction that you guys wanted to go in for your adoption?
Yeah, very good question. So I think it's a combination of both. You know, when we weighed the risks from both international and domestic, we just did a lot of talking and vetting out the pros and cons, and we were, it might sound odd, but never necessarily attached to the newborn phase. So for us, we were absolutely in a right mindset where we could adopt a child that didn't look like us. We were very inclined to accept a culture, a different race, and a child that wasn't, you know, very a newborn, which doesn't happen with international adoption. So it just, I understand that it's definitely not for everybody, but for us, it was just the very clear option because of all of those things that we were open to. And
okay, that makes, yeah, no, that's great. Thanks. That gives us a good idea of kind of where your mind was and where you were coming from. So the year that you began and then the year that you completed your adoptions, kind of fill us in on the timeline a bit.
Yeah, so we started the process with the loads of paperwork back in 2011. We went through the home study process and met some amazing social workers and people from the agency that really helped to get us prepared. And We went through a lot of training to prepare us for things that we have never in a million years thought of. You know, when we thought of being parents, we didn't realize when we initially started talking about parents, we just thought that it would be the biological route. But when we decided that adoption internationally was right for us, then we took on the race component and the culture component. So we did a lot of studying in that first year. And then we were to Ethiopia. So that was an exciting day when our paperwork was actually in the hands of Ethiopia. And at that point, we were just waiting to be matched and see the pictures of our future child.
So you completed an Ethiopia adoption in what year did you say it was?
Our son came home in July of 2013. We were matched with him. We saw his picture for the first time in March of 2013. We got to meet him in June, and he came home in July. He was 9 months old. Yeah.
Oh, wonderful. And then, not to kind of spoil the surprise here, but this wasn't your only adoption, right?
Nope, we decided our little superhero needed a sidekick. So we decided in 2018 that we were ready for our second child. So we called back up and spoke with AAI. We were kind of going back and forth on the country. We absolutely knew it was going to be international again, and we knew that we wanted to adopt a non-white child. We wanted to adopt somebody that was either of a different ethnicity black like Jonathan, our son. So my husband always felt very drawn to China as well. So when we talked about it, it was just like immediately, okay, China it is. And we started researching on the country, and we felt super good about our decision. And we started the process in 2015, which that process is much different for China. So we started our paperwork, our home study, and then I remember in September, we saw the most beautiful pictures of somebody that was going to be our daughter.
Aww. So what were the challenges that existed, in being realistic about adoption? We love hearing stories of children coming home to their forever families, but most families that we talk to do say that there were highs and lows, and I'm wondering if you could fill us in on just a couple of examples of what that was like for you and your husband and how you managed through that time.
Absolutely. I think, obviously you're very excited to be a parent. It's our first time being a parent, obviously. We only have the two children who are adopted, so we don't know what it's like to have a biological child. So some of the challenges, obviously, just getting our little one on a plane and bringing him to the United States, and that overwhelming, like, here's your nine-month-old. He crawls and he says a word or two. And so it was very interesting to see a very mobile child. So that was very interesting to us.
Mm-hmm.
We had a very easy transition with our son. It was almost unbelievable. We were very prepared to have a not easy transition. We understand that his whole world was going to be flipped upside down, and we were very prepared to handle that. And we were almost very surprised that he just attached and bonded so well. So he just did so well with everything. A plane ride, adjusting to all of the things. You know, things in the U.S. are very different than what he was used to in Ethiopia. So he handled things very, very well, and it wasn't until, probably he turned age 3 or 4 that we started noticing, some effects maybe relative, but his transition was just perfect. Another challenge with international adoption is the race. You know, when you go out as a family, you're constantly you don't blend in. You definitely stick out. So we celebrate that. We understand that we get a lot of questions and comments. That's very different. Sometimes it would be nice to just blend right in and not have to explain your story everywhere you go. But we're, you know, obviously 3.5 years into this, we're very used to handling those situations now.
Right. So you mentioned bonding and attachment, and this is an area of concern for many adoptive parents or for those prospective adoptive couples. Were you as prepared, were you prepared as well as you could be for what attachment and bonding can look like in internationally adopted children?
Yeah, I was definitely concerned about this. You know, what if they don't attach to us? What if they don't like us? You know, that's very scary going through your head, because we see their picture and we immediately know that that's our child. We immediately love them before we even met them, you know. So we have to be cognizant that that's not the thing for them. We're going and we're taking them from everything they know, and we're completely rocking their world and flipping it upside down. It's going to take time. It takes all of us time to adjust and accept changes. So we were very, very prepared for crying fits and tantrums and you name it. I think that we were in a really good mental place that we were just going to handle it as it came. And because of the age of our children, so our son was 9 months and our daughter was 16 months, we have not had any issues when it came to them attaching to us and bonding. So I think that that can be much more challenging if the child is older. But we got amazingly lucky when it came to it. We're actually starting to notice more of an issue. Like for our son, for example, he doesn't have attachment issues with his family members and our very close friends. But where he struggles is actually at school, daycare. So if teachers come and go, that's where we notice attaching issues, you know, people coming and going from his life in a daycare school setting is very challenging for him. So that's one thing we were not prepared for. We just thought when people talked about bonding and attachment, it was only to parents and siblings, you know, people in their immediate families. But we recently learned that that's not necessarily the case.
Right, right. And so your preparation and how you and your husband, you know, had a plan of how you were going to address these things, that came from the time that you spent while you were waiting for your adoptions, the home study period?
Yeah, so we did a lot of reading. We talked a lot, you know, looked at a lot of blogs, networked with some families, things like that. So we kind of had a plan of how we were going to do the bonding. You know, we hear a lot about cocooning. Some people are very supportive of cocooning and think it's very important to stay just as a tight family unit and nobody else come around very often, that kind of thing. We did that for a very short time with our son, but he actually struggled with only having two people with him at home because he was used to living in an orphanage with many, many people. So he did very well with other people coming around. So we just kind of let our child take the lead. If people came to visit, we would allow them to, but no feeding, no changing, no baths, anything like that. The primary care came from mom and dad because we wanted them to know that we were there to support him, and we were mom and dad. Same for our daughter. But we did baby wearing. We held them all the time. I still hold my 4-year-old son all the time, and he's huge. But we take family naps, and we just spend a lot of time connected together.
Wow. So you guys really, really did your research, and you were well educated about all the different topics. You've talked about several things here. And so these are definitely things that our listeners can look more into. You've mentioned cocooning and baby wearing and family naps. And so good for you guys for, you know, being as prepared as you were. Let's talk a little bit about race and culture. I know you touched on that just a minute ago. But can you share with the listeners, were there issues in your family related to race and culture? You've now adopted, you know, one child from China and one child from Ethiopia. What did that look like in the early days? And then what does that look like for your family now?
Yeah, it was very interesting. We did have a family member on my side who I was a little bit concerned about. You know, I have two nephews, biological, and they're white. And my children would be the first non-white people in our entire family, both sides. So, of course, I was a little bit on edge about that, but I understood that through this process, we would learn who our true supporters were, and we would expose our children to the people that were positive and supportive role models and examples for them. So we did. I was very concerned about one specific individual who completely proved me 100% wrong and is now extremely close with my son. He was very, very open and accepting, and he's treated the same. Both of my children are treated the same as their white cousins, and they are just wonderful, very supportive. We did, unfortunately, have another close person to us who, for whatever reason, decided that maybe our family dynamic wasn't in line with what they thought it should be. So that person is one that we haven't seen in about 3 years. So it's we definitely, as parents, we knew what we were getting into. We knew that as soon as we adopted children of different races, we would not raise them as, you know, dark-colored white people. We had to accept them for the race and ethnicity they were, celebrate their culture, because it's how we became a family. And if we didn't have people in our lives that supported that, we definitely did have to choose our children. And so we have been very invested in them and keeping them around people that love them and kind of align with our parenting methods. We talk a lot about adoption with our children. That's no secret. They know about birth mom. They know who they look like. So we're very honest and open with them about things at a very age appropriate level, let me confirm, because they're only, you know, almost 2 and 4. So you can't go in and tell them the whole story. You just have to keep it very age appropriate.
Right. And you've set the groundwork there to continue to build upon that story. And that's what's important as they develop. And so you've touched here on, you know, issues that we hear a lot about in families, about the support or lack of support in family. And I just want to point out that you did have a situation, it sounds like, where you had to sever ties. But on the opposite side of that, you had many, many, many family members that were open-armed and welcoming and embracing your husband and yourself and your children as a family. I imagine, though, from your perspective, that those were not easy things to navigate. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Absolutely. Yeah, it was a little challenging. You know, we have learned so much about ourselves and our bond as a married couple. We've learned so much through adoption, and we've learned a lot about the people that really do care and support us. So we have actually made a lot of friends on the adoption journey, children that have lived with Jonathan in Ethiopia at the same orphanage. And so these people live 30 to 45 minutes away from us here in Michigan. So we get these kids together, we network, the families talk. So I think that we've, in addition to our family members who are extremely supportive, we have built our own additional support group and ways or different people that we can be around that can help Jonathan, and you know, they look like each other. We put them together so they can be supportive of each other. So we have made so many great supportive friends out of this whole journey to our children. At the beginning, when people decide that they can't support your direction of adopting or having children of a different race, we just had to make up our mind that this is what we chose, and we are very happy with it. This is our life. We're so happy with it. And unfortunately, if you can't get on board with that, then unfortunately that is the loss of the other people.
Absolutely. One question that we hear often from couples in looking into adoption, particularly international, is what about health or medical issues? Did you have this sort of information at the time of your adoption for your children?
So in Ethiopia, it was very different. It was a waiting list style. So you submit your paperwork and then you just wait to be matched with a child. And medical issues for our Ethiopia program weren't addressed heavily, especially because the child matched with us had no diagnosed health issues. So it really wasn't anything that we thought of a lot, honestly. I remember addressing some of the major types of illnesses, and we knew it could be a possibility that our child would have something, but that's no different than, you know, having a biological child that would have some kind of ailment. So it was very different in the China program. So the China program is a special needs. We prefer to call it the waiting child program. So you know, signing into that program, that your child will likely have some type of health issue. So we spent a lot of time vetting through this list of health issues, pages and pages. And basically we got to look them up, research them, and decide if that was something that we really thought we could parent. And I remember that being so hard at the time because, you know, as a biological parent, you don't have that option. You don't have to say, oh, yep, I can handle this, or nope, I can handle this, or I can't handle that. But I remember, the advice from our support through the agency just reminding us that it's our choice, and we have to do what we feel is going to be best for that child. So we spent a lot of time researching, and that's another thing that drew us closer as a couple. We really had to come together on the same page to agree, and we had some healthy discussions on all of these health issues. So, yes, for China, we absolutely knew that there would be some type of medical need that our child would have.
So what about your and your husband's expectations entering into this adoption compared to the realities? Obviously, you for your second adoption, you had some experience, but the first time through, it was all new. So talk a little bit about that, if you could.
Yeah, so it was definitely new. We were very new to the idea of being parents, so that was kind of overwhelming in itself. But then to have a 9-month-old and of a different race, and so you had so many different complexities involved, I guess I would say. As far as expectations, I honestly believe that we thought through so much, did some reading, took classes, but we learned through one of our courses that you can't really set real expectations because you don't really know what's going to happen. So I think that we are both very open-minded and ready to expect or ready to handle anything that came our way. If we needed special medical help, we would find it. If we needed to see, a therapist relative to adoption, like attachment and bonding, we would go that route. We just we just knew that we would handle things as it came, and we would line up our resources so we had them available if necessary.
You were so all in, is what you were. Yes, you were ready for anything.
It's so hard. Even I imagine biological parents feel the same way. As you know, the things that I thought would be challenging for us were not an issue at all. And then there are things that happened where I wasn't prepared at all. But I feel like that happens as parenting in general. It's a tough job to be a parent. Very rewarding.
You bet.
The best job in the world, but it's very challenging. As far as the results or the realities, I think one interesting thing that I did not prepare myself for, we knew that the hardest day would be when we actually took custody of our children and separated them from their caregivers. And, you know, people think it's a very happy day, especially the people that aren't very familiar with adoption. They think it's a very happy day. And I remember my heart breaking on that day when we took custody of our children, because we were taking them away from everything they knew. So I think that I expected that, but in the moment I didn't realize how emotional and sad it would be. And even on a daily basis, I don't think I thought about how much I would think about their foster families and their biological mothers and fathers. And it is a daily thought that pops into my head. How are they doing? You know, it really drives me to be as good of a parent as I possibly can be to my children because of them. You know, the people that cared for them before they got to us, they were such a monumental part of their journey on this adoption for us. So I did not prepare myself for how much I would be thinking about them on a daily basis.
That's such a good point. And I do have one final question for you because we are running short on time. But suggestions for others that maybe are where you and your husband were back in 2010 and 2011, maybe in the early stages of contemplating international adoption, what kind of words of wisdom would you share with them? We have maybe another minute or two to go.
Sure. I would say that you would want to do your research and educate yourselves and make sure that you're understanding all the complexities involved in being a transracial family if you're adopting internationally. It's a whole different component, and it's not for everyone. So you have to be prepared, have resources, learn about race, learn about how to educate your children on race, network with other people that have been through this situation so you can pick their brains and just really be open-minded. Don't set too many expectations and just be open-minded to handle things as they come.
Thank you, Jessica, so very much for sharing you and your husband's journey through adoption, through international adoption. And you've really touched on a lot of the most important topics that we face in international adoption. So much appreciation to you for today.
Thank you so much for having me.
For those of you that are listening, please remember that we're live every Tuesday at 11 o'clock on this podcast, Adoption Focus. And if you'd like to connect with Adoption Associates, you can reach us at 800-677-2367 or on the web at adoptionassociates.net. Hope you can tune in again next week at 11. For now, this is Jennifer. Have a great day, everyone. Bye-bye.